I'm Lee Brown. This is Crazy Shit in Real Estate. And my head is swimmy a little bit because we have the AdWords nerd today, and he's a super nerd, and so am I. And so if you're a nerd too, welcome to your people. Enjoy the conversation. I'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
Before you get the rest of the story, I'd love to share a quick message from today's sponsor. If you've never heard of Follow Up Boss, you're going to love it. And it's going to get you organized in a way that will actually impact your business for profitability and for better excellence with those you're serving. For more information, go to followupboss.com/crazy. Thank you for coming on the show. So let's just start chatting a little bit. Dan, tell our audience who you are, where you're from. Give them a little bit of Dan Barrett background so they know what we're going to talk about.
All right, cool. So I run a company called AdWords Nerds. We're an online marketing company. We specialize in motivated seller leads, usually for real estate investors, people buying land, people buying residential, we do commercial, all that stuff. I'm located in Connecticut. Most of my team is from around here, although we're remote, have been for about 10 years now. And yeah, I just basically live on the internet, I guess is what I would say. I love the challenge of mastering a complex topic, something that's always changing. You know, you got the internet intersecting with real estate, intersecting with, you know, basically every part of human psychology, and it never gets boring. So that's kind of what I do every day.
So what did you do before you started messing around with Google and AdWords? Were you doing something in this space and you needed to find some opportunities to help? And
no, it's totally the opposite. So yeah, so I was a musician and I was getting certified to teach history at the high school level. So I was like, I'm going to be a teacher. I love teaching. That was kind of like my thing. It runs in my family. I was playing in bands. I was like going on tour on summer. And like what ended up happening is like over the years, there was always somebody that like needed to be the one to run the business side of whatever we were doing. And that kind of ended up being me. So when I was teaching, which I loved, but doesn't pay a lot, I started freelancing. And very quickly, I realized I was making more freelancing than I was gonna, you know, 3 years into my teaching career. So, you know, I started working on my own, started working with local businesses. I knew I wanted to be the best in the world at something. And just, I think I'm a fairly self-aware person. I was like, I'm not gonna be, you know, the world's strongest man. I'm not gonna be the best in the world at, you know, anything huge. I want to pick something and focus. And so I ended up going down to like a Tony Robbins business seminar. I put like $10,000 on a credit card. And I was like, I'm gonna go down there. I'm gonna pick a market. And I ended up sitting all the way in the back because I didn't know anything about Tony Robbins at the time, but I heard that he makes you dance and I did not want to dance. So I was like, I'm going to sit all the way in the back, like sitting in the back of a bus, you know, when you're trying to avoid the bus driver or whatever. So sat all the way in the back, ended up sitting next to some really amazing real estate investors and just kind of striking up a conversation with them, forming a relationship over the next couple of days. And they basically said, you know, hey, like people in real estate always need leads and that's what you do. So you should work with us. And basically it's been a decade since then. And all I have done since then is focus on real estate investing and sort of understanding those markets. So, you know, real estate wasn't my love when I got into it. Marketing was my love, but I have found that people in real estate are the absolute best clients. They're driven, they're self-starters. Everybody
will spend money.
Yeah, they love to spend money, but it's like I've never found an industry of people that is so driven towards personal development as I found in real estate. Right. So
I just love that.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
So what were these investors doing at Tony Robbins? Were they looking for investments? Were they looking for leads or were they there to find their own pathway? I'm so curious as to what they were doing in the back row with you.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, again, part of that personal development journey. It was a business specific thing. So we were all there kind of getting, you know, how to grow your business. I mean, so those folks, so Glenn and Amber Schwarm are still investors today. Actually, you know, started a really successful coaching business and got a really successful investing business. Just the most wonderful, kindest people you could ever meet. So they were like a perfect intro into the industry. But yeah, it was fun. I got a lot out of that. I still rely on some of that stuff today, but that changed my whole life. Right? It was like deciding to go down the route of focusing on a particular niche and particularly investors. That changed the entire trajectory of my business, right? And so it's, I always say, like, when I started working with investors, I didn't know anything about real estate. Now it's the thing I know the most about, which maybe isn't saying a lot, but, you know, that was a surprise to me at the time for sure.
Well, I love that you're still connected to them. And the first thing you said about them is how good they are, like good people. And I find that's the opposite of the message most of the public has about anybody related to real estate. But yeah. Then you also talk about finding this very tightly driven, focused niche. And most people that are successful in real estate, in whether it's on the investor side or working with clients, residential, commercial, land, once they figure out where their strengths are and which part of the public is their communication partner, man, people can knock the cover off the ball. The ones that have the hardest time are the ones that say, I'll help anybody, I can do anything. And they try to be all things to all people, which frankly is where I've seen a lot of people go broke in advertising, because they call you and say, hey, I want to get some leads. And you would say, well, talk to me about your business. Oh, I'll take anything. Well, you could spend zillions of dollars with no return. But if they come to you and they're really drilled into what matters, the success can be huge. So once you figured out this was something you could master, how did you get yourself to the point where you could say, I see other opportunities, but I'm going to stay in real estate? What kept you focused in this specific niche?
Yeah, I think a couple of things, right? I mean, one, I have never felt for even a moment like I have a mastery of what I'm doing yet, right? Like I always say, like, no matter what you do in real estate, if you're an agent or an investor or whatever, whatever your connection to it is, the underlying reality of what we do is that we're dealing with a constantly shifting sort of set of interlocking relationships, right? You've got public sentiment, government policy, underlying economics, you've got the, you know, fundamental scarcity of land. I mean, it's just, there are so many pieces connecting at once, right? And that means that change is just the reality, which is always the reality of what we do, right? And so I've never felt like, hey, I've got this on lock. And so because I've never felt like that, I've never been bored. And for me, like I think a lot of entrepreneurs, right, we move on when we get bored, when the challenge goes away, right? So that's one. And I think the other thing is just that I have always felt, and this is kind of getting to what you said, that I am going to be best served in terms of playing my own game, achieving my goals, helping my clients by really getting to the point where I feel like I know exactly what I want to do, or at least exactly how I'm going to approach a problem when it's presented to me, right? That's that sort of getting to that level of comfortability with something. And you're exactly right. Like in investing, it's exactly the same way. When you have investors that specialize in a certain deal type or serving a particular type of client or even serving a particular market, you become the expert in that thing. And generally, in any sort of marketing context, the vast majority of the revenue, the profits, the fame, like whatever it is, the vast majority of those good things are going to flow to the 1 to 2 to 3% of people at the top, right? If you are the dominant player in your market, no matter how niche that market seems to be, the vast majority of the revenue from that market is going to go to you. So ultimately, even from a purely marketing context, it's really in your best interest to specialize. And it sort of goes against the sort of natural psychology where it's like, well, I'm going to have way more opportunities, like you said, if I help anybody. But like you said, a lot of people blow themselves up just trying to do anything for everybody. You never get the sort of economies of scale that come from really, really specializing. So, you know, it takes discipline. Like most of us, it's like if you're entrepreneurial or, you know, you're a self-starter, there's always the urge to do a new thing. And I have outlets for that urge. Like, right, like I have like a personal blog. I've done all sorts of weird stuff over my time, but it ultimately, the strongest businesses, I believe, are going to be ones that have a really strong focus, at least in the beginning.
Well, I think that's definitely a trait of entrepreneurism is boredom. because once you're good at something, you're like, it's not even a squirrel thing. It's I need to be doing something. But as you're talking, I'm sitting here writing down, you made this little tiny remark and then you blew on past it. I need my people to pause and go back and listen to that little segment again, because holy smokes, it's like the answer to most people's marketing content woes. I find that a lot of people in and around the real estate space get so blocked up when it comes to, but what am I supposed to say? I don't know how to create content. And what you said, and you might even hear yourself, is once you have that lead come in, what will you do with it? And you're reverse engineering that. And that's so cool. I'll figure it out, because that is the mark of an amateur, is that you're always trying to create anew every single time. Professionals have it down to a science, know the questions are going to be asked, and they know their answers in advance. And so that was so brilliant. So thank you for dropping that little nugget. So let me ask this question of you. So I do love multifamily investing. I own some multifamily. I sell a lot of multifamily. So if I came to you and said, hey, Dan, I want to put together a campaign to reach multifamily purchasers of, and being really specific here, not A-class properties, which are super shiny and perfect, but of B-minus, C-plus, which means they have tenants, they're affordable housing, and they probably are clean and serviceable, maybe not clean, clean-ish and serviceable-ish, not falling down, but they're not fancy. So what's the next question you're going to ask me when you're trying to figure out if I am a good client for you?
So the next question I would almost always ask is, what's the ultimate goal, right? Like, I'm a big believer in, you know, clearly I'm an online marketing person, right? Like, my company is called AdWords Nerds. We named it after Google Ads. That's my baby. Right. But, you know, and I think Charlie Munger always calls us man with a hammer syndrome, right? If you only have one tool in your toolbox, you try to solve every problem with that tool. And ultimately, that's not always in the best interest of everybody. Right. And so the most important thing to me is always, what is the end result we are trying to produce? What is the goal? What is your goal? Right. Like, do you have a certain amount of margin you need on every deal you do? Right? Do you have a limitation on the amount of budget you can safely spend without putting your business or lifestyle or whatever in jeopardy? Right? Like, what is your tolerance for risk? Right? All these things are really important, because there are multiple ways to solve any marketing problem. Right? So, for example, if we're trying to find people who are purchasing the sort of properties you're talking about, you're trying to find other investors, you're trying to find sellers or whatever, there are going to be ways we can reach those people with direct mail. There are going to be ways you can reach those people on Facebook. There'll be ways you can reach those people on TikTok. There'll be ways you can reach those people in Google Ads or in SEO. And all of those channels and all of those methodologies have strengths and weaknesses, right? Like TikTok, you can reach an incredibly large audience very quickly for relatively little, but that audience is going to tend to be lower or tend to be younger. And so that audience is probably going to take more time before they are ready to invest with you. So does that...
I have no attention span. Can we point that out?
Well, yeah. Also that. But it's like, but exactly right, right? There's going to be a certain type of content that's going to appeal to those people, that's not going to appeal to, for example, trying to reach a similar audience on Instagram, right? Or on Google or whatever. And so does that align with your natural skill set or what you're trying to achieve? I mean, so for example, if I was going to go out and say, okay, I want to find purchasers for multifamily properties, I might, for example, create organic content that I think is going to appeal to that kind of person and then promote it on Facebook. So expand my reach to as wide of an audience as possible, right? I might build a list of mailing addresses, direct mail addresses, and then I might put those into a tool like, for example, there's a tool called El Toro that's often used in political online online marketing campaigns, where I can give them a direct mail address, like physical, you know, residential addresses, and then I can show online ads to people in those homes, right? I might just do a text messaging campaign, or I might start reaching out to people on LinkedIn. Right? It depends on what I'm trying to do. And it also depends on my budget, how much time I have available. So the question for us, and this is how we work with our clients, is always, what are you trying to achieve? because there's always a way. It might not be working with me. It might not be using my personal favorite tool, but there's always a way, right? And I really believe, just like as an ethical thing and as a business marketing thing, if you help as many people as possible get what they want, you will ultimately get what you want, right? And it's not about forcing people down a particular path. It's about finding what works for them and meets their goals in the most efficient way. And that just unlocks a lot of value for everybody involved, I think.
And if I'm not mistaken, that's a Zig Ziglar quote, and all of his sales knowledge is so timeless, even though he's been gone for a long time. So let me ask you this question. So I kind of made fun of TikTok because I'm a middle-aged mom. I'm supposed to make fun of TikTok.
Yeah.
And Facebook is turned into the demographic my age and a little older. Instagram is now my age. My daughter likes to say that middle-aged moms ruined Instagram. She's not wrong. Snail mail is a crapshoot when it comes to things like investor properties, because some people have PO boxes that they never check. They just use it for junk mail. And it's such a mixed bag. So if we look at Google, of course, it's the largest search engine. And also because it owns YouTube, that's a double-sided beast there.
Yeah.
What is the demographic that goes to Google to search now, if you looked at the bulk of users and of hits? Because we know that some people don't search there anymore. They do go to the social engines to search. But obviously, the power of Alphabet is enormous. So who are we serving there on the general picture?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? I mean, you've seen, if you look at raw user data, just usage data, Google is essentially growing year over year in most demographics, mm-hmm. right? If you look at specifically real estate search trends in Google, I think the sort of National Association of Realtors puts out every year, they sort of do a study on the percentage of real estate transactions that start online, right? Typically, that's going to mean starting on Google, because even if people are, for example, going to end up on Zillow, they are generally starting that process on Google, right? And so if you look at the sort of demographics that are doing that, I think the last stat that I saw, which might be 2 years old now, was somewhere around 75 to 80% of all real estate transactions either start or involve an online search in some way, right? So there is a ton of sort of movement and activity in that channel. But like you said, Google is not one thing. It is composed of many different things, right? So it's slightly different if I'm searching on YouTube, or if I'm searching on Google Organic, or if I'm clicking on an ad. These are all sort of varying levels of motivation or sort of where you are in that sales or buying cycle, right? So the way that I will typically think about it is, if you are in Google search, the primary benefit of Google search is that you can dial in as much as possible how far along they are in the process. Right. So if I'm targeting Google search, what I'm usually looking for is what we'll call in marketing people at the bottom of the funnel, meaning they are ready to make a decision one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Right. This search is transactional, meaning like I'm looking for, you know, apartment to rent in West Harbor. Right. Or I am looking for a realtor in my area, or I am, you know, typing in the classic real estate investor keyword, which is sell my house fast. Right. These things are all very transactional in the sense that they are indicating a certain level of readiness to make a decision. Now, YouTube, social media, things like that, those are incredibly powerful tools in the sense that they get you to the broadest possible audience, but they tend to be far more informational than transactional. Right. So I'm generally, if I'm doing a YouTube advertising campaign, or I'm promoting a YouTube video or anything like that, I'm looking for people that are typing in things like, are house prices going down? And in fact, this is something that we've seen really crop up just over the last 30 days in Google. Like, what is happening with house prices? Is this the bottom of the market? Is this the top of the market? Like, just what's happening? Like, assessment, keywords like that, right? These are all informational in the sense that there's someone trying to make a decision, right? There's someone trying to get context for a decision that they want to make, but they are not yet ready to buy, sell, work with someone, et cetera, right? So these different channels end up having different levels of utility depending on what your marketing goal is. If I'm building an audience, I'm doing that on YouTube. I'm doing that on TikTok. I'm doing that on Instagram, right? If I am looking for buyers or sellers, I'm doing that in Google search all day, every day. And of course, take everything I say with a grain of salt. This is what I do, right? So it's like, I'm a little biased, but for my money, it's still the strongest marketing channel for that kind of seller or buyer, for sure.
If you've ever wondered why some realtors do more business than others, then you pay attention to them and do what they do. In fact, one of my favorite friends in real estate is Deborah Beagle. She's in the Nashville area, and she will tell you, as managing broker of the Ashton Group, that the agents who join her team on Follow Up Boss are getting an average of 2 homes under contract in the first 90 days. If you want to be like Miss Beagle, go to followupboss.com/crazy. You'll be really glad you checked it out. And frankly, so will your clients, because they'll get to use you and be amazed by your real estate awesomeness. Go to followupboss.com/crazy. Okay, so you just, when you were spitting out the little questions that are being asked by people that are evaluating the market, that is exactly what realtors are hearing every single day right now.
Yeah.
It's a market crashing, because they all think somebody's got to have the inside scoop. And for a large percentage of the public, they think the interwebs is the inside scoop.
Right.
So where should people go if they're trying to figure out what questions are being asked of Google? How do I know, if I go to Google, what other people are asking about real estate? Is that something I can find as an end user, or do I have to have a professional like you to figure that out? Because obviously that is a great space to start thinking about for how I create the answer to that, which could lead to the transaction.
Yeah, that's an awesome question. So there's differing levels of technical, whatever you want to call it,
ability.
Sophistication, right? That you might want to apply to that, right? If you're like me and you're like, I want a spreadsheet that updates every month with, stats and stuff, there are tools that are going to give you that. So the most common ones are called SEM Rush. There's another one that's called AHREFS. So HREFS is how that's pronounced. If you Google SEO tools, you'll find those. Those are both paid tools that give you a ton of keyword data, keyword trend data, et cetera. But you do not need to do that. And in fact, there's easier ways to do it that are actually what I recommend to most people. The one that's actually the easiest, if you just go to Google, just regular google.com, you go to the search bar and you start typing in a question you are thinking about, right? So a related question to your business. So for example, like house prices, right? You just type in house prices.
Okay, I'm going to do it right now. I'm going to google.com. Yeah. I'm in Concord, North Carolina. So I'm in the Google search bar. I'm putting in house prices, Concord.
And then you see the suggestions that pop
up?
Yeah. So those are the autocomplete suggestions. Those are what Google sees as trending and relevant searches for this term, right? The term in this case is what we just typed in, house prices, right? So anything that pops up here is both current and relevant. Similarly, if you just hit return, you go to the search results page,
okay,
and then you scroll all the way down to the bottom, there's typically a box that says related searches. These are also topical, trending, and relevant searches for that term.
Is that the people also ask?
Yeah, people also ask is amazing.
Oh, I see.
So that's there in the top. And then there's related searches down at the bottom. All of these change dynamically based on what people are searching for. Right.
How frequently do they change?
Every day.
Really?
Every day for every single person, depending on what you search for. Right. Every single person, every single time they search, is seeing a completely unique instance of what Google is serving up to them. There is no more like search results page for a given keyword that everybody sees. Everybody sees something different based on your search history, your location, all that stuff. So what you're seeing there is always going to be current and it's always going to be relevant, right? Or at least let's be really clear. Google will think it's relevant, right?
Relevant.
It doesn't always mean it's relevant. But the other way to do this too is that there's a free tool called Google Trends. If you Google Trends, you'll see it. And that will show you sort of historical search data, will show you if a trend is going up or down week over week, month over month. That's a really powerful tool. It's also free. So if you're curious, like, hey, are house prices going up over time? easy way to do it, right? And I saw the New York Post recently published an article that was based on, you know, some agency put out research project basically said the search term sell my house fast increased by 2,500 times over the last 90 days or something, right? And generally they're using Google Trends to do that kind of research.
Okay. So let me ask you a question.
Sure.
On the Google results, I think everybody knows you got to be on page one because most people are just not going to click multiple pages. So in any real estate house for sale or houses on the market, any house thing, the big daddy sites control the top results. Mm. How does a regular Joe or Jane real estate agent, investor, wholesaler, mom and pop, how do they get into page one? Can you get past those big websites with any kind of targeted data? If they hire you, is that something that you can help them show up in different ways? Is it a lost cause at this point because they're so big and have so much money?
No, it's never a lost cause. And the reason it's not a lost cause is that it is ultimately in Google's best interest to show the best result to the searcher, because that's what brings people back to Google and that's what increases their long-term ad revenue, which is what they care about. So ultimately, even if you're going up against, for example, a really entrenched incumbent, like, for example, Zillow or whatever, there are ways to make sure that you get up there and get traffic from those same searches, right? A couple different ways. You could pay for ads, right? That's an easy way to just skip the line, right? But let's say you don't want to pay for ads. You want to do it organically. Yes, you could hire me or someone like me, right? And we can certainly help you. But there's nothing that an agency is going to do for you that you can't do yourself, okay? The primary drivers of how much traffic you're getting from Google, there's a couple different ones. One is the keywords that you're targeting. If you're thinking about a keyword as, okay, like buy a house, Texas or something, right? That's what we call a big head keyword. Basically means that it's really general and it's going to get a ton of traffic. And those are very hard for smaller businesses to break in on, right? Because there's Zillow's, there's the Trulia or whatever. But if you lengthen that keyword, you make it more specific. For example, you say buy a ranch house in Dallas, Texas, right? We've added the term ranch. We've added the term Dallas. We've converted that big head keyword into what's called a long tail keyword. Long tail keywords often get less traffic overall, but are more specific and drive higher quality traffic. If I'm typing in buy a ranch house in Dallas, I'm further along in that buying cycle than someone that's just typing in buy a house. And generally, I'm going to convert more often, become a client more easily, et cetera. There's also significantly less competition for a keyword like that. Because if you imagine that you're Zillow, what's Zillow doing? Zillow is trying to compete everywhere at once. They don't have enough time, or they probably do, but they don't have maybe the willingness to create really high quality content for every single long tail keyword. It just isn't really feasible, right? So this is sort of the sort of way that we think about local competition. It's how can I be more specific, right? If I'm local to a market, I am more specific. I am more valuable to Google than, for example, Big Box, Zillow, Trulia, Open Door, Knock, OfferPad, whatever you want to call, right? So that's kind of step one. It's like really try to be specific. And then once you have a specific target that you are trying to sort of break into a market on, what really matters is only two things, which is the quality of the content you create on that page and the number and quality of links that link to that page from other sources, right? So if I'm, for example, buying a ranch house in Dallas, Texas, I'm just making up this keyword, right? But that's going to be the keyword I want to break in on. How am I going to make the absolute best and most valuable thing that exists about that topic? I might do original research. I might take a bunch of pictures. I might write something really long. I might have a video. I might have graphics or infographics. I might interview people, like whatever it's going to be. How do I make the best thing for that? And if that's not enough in and of itself, then we add links, which are essentially anytime a third-party website, an external website to you, creates a link into your website or content. Google kind of views these links as essentially votes in a popularity contest. The more people that vote for me by linking their website to mine, the better that Google is going to assume my website is, or the more authoritative. So if you think about a local search, like our ranch house in Dallas, Texas example, we can build links from local sources that matter, that imply some sort of authority in realty. So for example, the contractors that you might work with, or the other agencies that you've worked with, or houses that you've sold that you can link to in some way, right? If you have a portfolio of homes that you've worked on or something, linking back to this page. Local government sites, right? If you are in the Better Business Bureau or the Chamber of Commerce, or you sponsor a local baseball team, or you know, you volunteer in some way on the city council and they link to you in some way. All of these things are things that a company like Zillow can't possibly reproduce at scale, right?
Okay, so back in 2005, 1,000 years ago, a bunch of us agents were involved in the beginning of a real estate community called Active Rain. And it was basically a big family because it was only the bleeding edge realtors at that time that were involved in it. And actually, we're all still friends today. And now it's huge and it's been bought and sold a few times. But at the original, we did a lot of this link back and forth. But a couple of people got their blogs in trouble because they were accused of being link farms. So many of us just let go of that practice altogether. So are you saying it's still an active practice, but you just have to be thoughtful about how many links you put on a page, or how do you not get into the sandbox with Google?
Yeah, so
people, and that might still be too deep of a rabbit hole, but I have some nerds that watch my show.
No, this is wonderful. I spend most of my day in rabbit holes of one size or another, so I love it. So this is still a practice that happens, right? This whole, like, I'm going to create an artificial blog and I'm just going to post a bunch of, and not saying that this is what you're talking about, but I'm going to make something and post a bunch of garbage on it. I'm going to link to my website and that's going to be a link and Google's going to, yeah. The problem is, and I will often point this out to people, if you have an idea like this to somehow artificially game the system, is your thesis essentially that you have thought of it, but the engineers that Google hires to professionally think about this all day, every day, haven't thought of that yet? Yeah, it's not typically very common, right? I had one client say that, I've discovered the secret. I build tons of links to it and it's great. And I was like, well, what's your secret? And he's like, I have a public Google calendar and I link to myself from the Google calendar. And I was just like, there's no way they haven't thought of this, right? Like, it's just, it didn't make any sense to me.
So you wanted to say bless your heart to him, but you're insane, right?
Yes. You know, being from Connecticut, you say bless your heart, people, you know, their hair
goes. You know what it means. Everybody knows
exactly
what it means.
Yes. It's just so sweet. It's adorable. So what I will typically say is there's a very big difference between artificially generating links and earning links. And there's going to be some combination of those that's totally fine. In some ways, for example, and this is something we've done for clients, we say, hey, sponsor a local 5K, you know, for whatever amount, they will often link back to you. That's a very valuable link. In many ways, that's artificial. You paid for that link in some way or another, right? But that's, you know, generally okay. But the gold standard for link building is ultimately going to be earned media. It's earned media, and link building is exactly like generating media of any type. What are you doing that is notable, valuable, worthy of recognition in your community, right? So it's one of the reasons that, for example, I love going on podcasts, and I encourage people to start podcasts or start a YouTube video or whatever it is, because what you're doing is educating and creating value, and that will often create legitimate links back to your website. It's not immediate, and it's not fast necessarily. I always say, like, it's simple, but it's not easy.
Right.
But it is ultimately where most of the value comes from. That's why I said the first part of that SEO strategy is not to build links. It's to build the best piece of content that exists, right? So SEO is very competitive. A lot of it depends on what your competitors are doing. If you have really, you know, not sophisticated, not savvy competition, a little SEO goes a long way. But if you are competing with people that are really putting the effort in, ultimately it comes down to what can you do that makes your website better than theirs to the end user, not to Google, but to the seller or the buyer or the commercial, you know, transactor or whatever it is. How can you make your thing more valuable to them? And if you think in that way, you'll sort of naturally end up where Google wants you to go anyway. I almost never worry about getting smacked by Google because ultimately the goal is always just make a better thing. And there's technical pieces that go along with that. But as long as you have that in your sort of sights, I think you're going to be fine.
And I totally wasn't watching the clock. So our episode went long, but hopefully everybody enjoyed this little nerdy rabbit hole as much as I did, because I sat here taking notes the whole time because I'm so excited to go do some updating to some of my marketing and might even have to reach out to you, see what we can do with some Google AdWords. But Dan, if anybody's looking for professional help, they listened to all this and thought they could do it, looked it up and said, oh, I ain't got time for this. How is it best to reach out to you and inquire about what your offerings are?
Yeah, so our website is adwordsnerds.com. So adwordsnerds.com. You go there, we put out a bunch of free stuff, free content, all that fun stuff. So you can go and check it out. And yeah, reach out to us if you want. I would say we offer a free strategy session for anybody that just, you know, basically all we do is help you build a strategy for your market. And if you want to help with that, that's awesome. But if not, you know, we want you to get started anyway. I really, truly believe every single person in real estate needs some kind of online marketing strategy. Doesn't need to involve me at all, but I want everybody listening to this to get started, even if it's just in a small way. So AdWordsNerds.com would be the place to look us up.
And because I know some of y'all are not in a place where you can write that down, don't stress, because all of Dan's contact information is in the show notes for this episode. So make sure you click over and grab some information and get a little help if maybe you're too overwhelmed to implement it yourself. Dan, thanks so much for coming on the show and for dropping so many amazing, valuable pieces of information. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This was a blast. It was a wonderful start to my day, so I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, friends, if you learned something from Dan, you should probably put it down in the comments. Give him a thumbs up or a high five. Most importantly, tune back in next time and I'll see you around. Okay, now don't forget to go try Follow Up Boss so that your business can continue to expand in professionalism and then you can meet some more crazy people yourself. I really appreciate Follow Up Boss sponsoring this episode, but mainly I appreciate them for giving y'all double the free trial time with no credit card required. So make sure you go to followupboss.com/crazy and then let me know what you think. I'll see you guys next time.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally won't just subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.